Hello. I'm gonna try and blame this on my computer, but I'd rather blame it on the universe telling me that it doesn't want me to do this, Jeff. Doesn't want me to do this episode. I'm sorry I'm late. Time is already a big theme of this incredibly strange thing we're about to do here.
On time, a subject with which you're not particularly familiar. Closing time, the doomsday clock, Pablo, is ticking right now, and we got about a half hour till it goes off.
Countdown commencing. And I look, we didn't.
Can I do some music in the
background? Oh, please. I think you have to stop there because you're actually too good at that. And we're now venturing into copyright infringement. By the way, your voice has gotten so good in the almost 700 episodes I've been hosting this show. I've really seen you evolve. And I'm proud of you, Jeff. I'm proud of you as an artist.
I want to be that extremely old person who goes on American Idol. And do you remember the guy who did Pants on the Ground?
No.
I feel like I've got some sort of a pants on the ground in me, and just having Simon Cowell laugh at me would be the best.
I mean, look, you've tossed me a number of segues to truly disgusting things that people, I think, don't want to hear us discuss. When we're here to discuss something that is very squarely on theme. Because Jeff Passan, the thing that we are here to talk about today, as the countdown is on, and I hear the seconds passing, and I'm already getting emotional, is the fact that Major League Baseball is kind of feeling the exact same way right now because of the pitch clock. So, how important, how big a thing in the world of baseball, in the scope of baseball history, would you say, is the pitch clock?
I don't think I'm exaggerating, Pablo, when I say this is the biggest thing to happen in Major League Baseball in at least a half a century and probably more. At one point, a few months ago, I was talking with our friend Michael Kay, and I said to him, I think that this is going to be the biggest change to baseball since integration.
Man.
And they're two different things, mind you. I'm not trying to, by any means, minimize the fact that baseball, which
No.
is now, 30%+ Latino, and which, though it has far fewer Black players than it did once upon a time, has undoubtedly become a better sport because not everyone in it is white. But in terms of the effect that it has on the game, there are people at Major League Baseball right now who are both frightened and giddy. They're giddy because they believe that the pitch clock is going to have such a demonstrable effect on the game and such a great draw to fans that they're saving baseball. And yet, at the same time, they're really nervous because no successful major professional sport, Pablo, ever undergoes an undertaking that fundamentally changes how the game looks, how it operates.
Right.
And really, not just a game, but a game like baseball, which has been so reticent to change in the past, is now making a change that I don't think the NFL, the NBA, or the NHL would ever consider doing in one fell swoop.
No, reticence to change, a feeling of giddy terror. I can relate. So, if you didn't understand what Jeff and I were just referring to in the open of the show, This is my last episode of ESPN Daily. And not easy. Not easy to sort of thread this needle here, but bear with me, because it is fitting, cosmically appropriate, I would even argue, that the avatar for every guest I've had during my tenure on this show is Jeff. Because the story that Jeff Passan is bringing us with opening day around the corner this week in Major League Baseball is one about time and evolution and how you're supposed to manage that hug of history while also figuring out your future. And at the end here, after we talk to Jeff, spoiler alert, I'm gonna say goodbye to you guys. I have one more thing, another thing I'd like you to know, as it were. And I just ask that you stick around for that. It's important to me. I wanna leave this thing the right way. And so, yeah, that'll be then. I appreciate you sticking with us. But for now, right now, let's do this one more time. And so I am Pablo Torre. It is Monday, March 27th. And this is ESPN Daily.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So Jeff, it's here. Baseball season is upon us again, and the national pastime, which has worn that title, national pastime, with some sense of sort of almost tongue-in-cheekness over time as football becomes king and baseball has to reckon with what it is now. I do want to reckon with what it used to be. Like, let's get into the time machine, as I've said way too often on this show. How did we get here? Where does the journey to the pitch clock actually begin?
Well, I want to go back 100 years, Pablo. Let's go back to 1924. One of the first years that Baseball Reference has the average time of game. And the average time for a baseball game to be played in 1924 was an hour and 54 minutes. And that sounds kind of ridiculous if you're a modern baseball fan, right? Because
yes.
I'll get to the number eventually, but suffice to say, it's not an hour and 54 minutes. The time of game started creeping up a little. In the 30s, it went over 2 hours. And right around the mid-1950s, we hit the 2.5 hour mark for the first time, which I think a lot of people think is the sweet spot mm-hmm. for a game. But in 1965, there had been talk of a pitch clock, just banter, the idea that, hey, maybe this is something that the sport needs. But in 1965, Charlie Finley, the owner of the Kansas City A's, one of the great characters in baseball history, he knew of Rule 8.04, which has been on the books in baseball for a century now. And Rule 8.04 at that time said a pitcher must deliver a pitch within 20 seconds or he will be assessed an automatic ball.
This rule, despite it existing for 100 years, I haven't heard about it until literally just now.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's like the rule we have with our kids. No eating food on the couch. And then you see crumbs there. And sorry, the dog didn't bring them there. Like, there are rules that just don't get enforced as much as you would like them to. Well, Charlie Finley wanted to enforce this rule, and he was the original troll. And so at Memorial Stadium in Kansas City, he put up what he called the pitchometer. And the pitchometer was a 20-second clock, and it would count down. And umpires, being the salty creatures and characters that they are, they would assess penalties only on Kansas City pitchers, because Charlie Finley had the temerity to question them and their ability to do their jobs. And after a couple of weeks, he took it down. But the notion of a pitch clock continued to live on as game times kept creeping longer. The 1980s saw us go into the 2 hour and 40 minute realm. And then by the end of the decade, it was 2:50. And we reached, in the year 2000, for the first time, the 3 hour threshold. And Major League Baseball would intermittently try to enforce some of the rules, you know, tell batters, for example, to keep one foot in the batter's box. And it was hilariously ignored. In 2015, David Ortiz went out and just absolutely shredded MLB for doing it. They were fining players $500 for every violation. And he said, that's fine, I'll just go bankrupt. Like, that's how much he cared about it and thought about it and even gave it consideration.
That's how much David Ortiz and his colleagues wanted baseball games to all be the length of an Avatar sequel.
That's exactly right. And they tried in the minor leagues to institute a pitch timer. And, well, what happened? Pitchers recognized that the rules were written so that if they step off the rubber, that the clock restarts, and that there was no penalty for the number of times you can step off the rubber. And so they just did that. And
kids defying their parents by figuring out the precise letter of the law is hilarious. And for fans, by the way, also exhausting.
Yeah. And that's what baseball has become, Pablo. It's become a slog. It's become a game that in 2022 average 3 hours, 6 minutes. The year before, it was 3 hours, 11 minutes. I think there's a psychological barrier at the 3 hour mark that just appalls us as human beings today. Mm-hmm. We look at 3 hours as being an enormous investment in time, and we look at 2.5 hours as something that's eminently reasonable. And so Major League Baseball, it was reaching a reckoning, because attendance has gone down. Television ratings have gone down. The resonance of the sport is not the same as it once was.
Yes.
It's just not as enjoyable a product to watch as it once was. And because of that, I think Major League Baseball was facing a crisis of its own making. This did not have to be that way, but it is. And so what was MLB going to do about it?
So they begin to realize that this is unsustainable. And maybe they knew it before, but now they realize that they got to put teeth behind these rules. You can't let the kids get away with, you know, don't touch your sister. And they just put, like, you know, the finger an inch away from them. And it's just as bothersome, right? They got to put some actual legislation here that does some stuff. And so that legislation, how do you pass it if this is what your constituency of players, of umpires, collectively feels like? Like, get this pitchometer away from me.
Well, you pass it by using a stick as opposed to a carrot. And that stick came to Major League Baseball when it took over the minor leagues. In the past, Minor League Baseball was sort of its own entity, and then Major League Baseball said, we want to create capital one O-N-E, capital B baseball. And one baseball is the idea that everything in the baseball universe falls under the umbrella of Major League Baseball. And so all of a sudden, with the minor leagues under MLB's control, the league could set out and do some testing. And this testing, Pablo, was wide-ranging and was instituted to address any number of concerns. First and foremost, of course, the pace of game and the time of game. But beyond that, the three true outcomes baseball, the home runs, strikeouts, and walks that have taken over the sport and have led to this pace. What can we do about that? And maybe that involves limiting shifts, the action that has been taken away. You know, Major League Baseball did a wide survey testing of fans. And fans said they wanted two things to be improved. They wanted a quicker pace and a quicker game. And they also wanted more action. And more action, the things they like. Stolen bases, for example. If you put bigger bases in place and cut down the distance between the bags, you're going to have more steal attempts. And so Major League Baseball in 2021 did a bunch of A-B testing in the minor leagues. And what they found was that the most effective rule by a long shot was the pitch clock that they instituted in low A West, which used to be the California League. When they did this, the average game time dropped more than 20 minutes, when in the past, trying to get pace up, trying to get games quicker, they would measure it by seconds. Like if we got 30 seconds, that was a giant leap for mankind right there. And here they're doing it for 20 minutes. And on August 17th, 2021, a group of six MLB executives flew to California and went to Rancho Cucamonga, the Dodgers low A affiliate. And they wanted to watch games to see what this pitch clock looks like in person. The clock was 14 seconds without runners on base. It was 19 seconds with runners on base. And in the second inning, Raul Ibanez, a guy who played in Major League Baseball until he was 42.
Royals.
Yeah.
Your
with
Royals.
Royals. With your Yankees. With He was with everyone. Ours.
Yeah, our everything, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Raul Ibanez is a very thoughtful, extraordinarily well-liked guy and somebody who started working for Major League Baseball after he retired. And in the second inning, Raul Ibanez looked down at his phone for one pitch. And all of a sudden, when he looked up, there was an out. And he turned to Morgan Sword, who's an executive VP at the league, who's in charge of this entire project. And he said, "What happened?" And it was a very telling moment for Raul in that situation, because baseball is not a game, Pablo, where you can look down at your phone and expect to miss anything. It's a game where if you are watching at home, you can reasonably go to the fridge, get a drink, drink that drink, get another drink, drink that drink too. And I'm not talking like shotgun and beers. I'm talking leisurely sips.
No, I'm talking about like homemade seltzer. You're like using a soda stream to build, to carbonate.
Yes, you can brew your own kombucha in the time it takes for one Major League at bat. And all of a sudden, he sees this and he's like, "Oh my God, this might actually work." And there was a text chain among that group later that night. And Morgan Sword wrote, "We're headed to the bottom of the ninth and it's 2 hours, 11 minutes. And after the game, Raul Ibanez says, "Pace of play was great. We should do this at the big league level." And on that day, August 17th, 2021, the course of Major League Baseball's history changed, because that was the day when the people who were in charge of charting that course for the future of the game realized that it was going to include a pitch clock.
All right, Jeff, after the break, how all of those tremors from Rancho Cucamonga ended up shaking up the entirety of baseball itself.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Jeff, you had been describing for us this desire to make one baseball, and the way that they would make one baseball, where all of the rules were the same, all the regulations were all coherent inside of this one vision for the first time. Their approach was to create a multiverse, basically, to try all these different things in the minors, and they would prune all of those other timelines that were less effective. And what you're saying is that Raul Ibanez helped baseball decide upon the pitch clock as the thing that they should organize this new evolution of the sport around. How would you say that it's gone now that it's been implemented in spring training in the major leagues?
Yeah, it's like they got rid of Alligator Loki, you know? it's cute, it's funny, but we're looking for something that's a little more substantive here.
Yeah, a little more plot dependent.
Yeah. We're looking to essentially perform liposuction on baseball because that's what's at the heart of this whole thing, Pablo. When you're getting rid of time in a Major League Baseball game by using the pitch clock, you're not having any less baseball. There are still 27 outs to be had before the game is over. There are still duels between pitcher and batter. All the stuff you love about baseball remains. You're just getting rid of the fat. And this theme of optimization, of analytics gone wild.
Yes.
It's been really prevalent in baseball in the last few years, when I think the fallout of the sabermetric revolution has illustrated that the game at Rott is not the game a lot of people fell in love with.
No, Jeff, this is a theme that might be on the aegis of ESPN Daily as I've hosted it. It's the idea that we are here to reckon with the ways in which optimization has come at the cost of entertainment.
Listen, what is baseball ultimately if not something that exists to make us happy and to bring us joy? And we found happiness and joy in modern baseball, but it was almost like finding happiness and joy in something that you acknowledge is flawed, but you love it anyway because love, it exists for good and for bad. Through better and worse, till death do you part.
We found love in a hopeless place, as the Bard once said.
So, Major League Baseball, Morgan Sword and the rest of the executives went back, and they immediately made a pitch to Rob Manfred, the commissioner, and Dan Halem, the deputy commissioner, that this is something that we have to do. And so, the testing that was AB in 2021. Turned into everyone in the minor leagues in 2022, because once you have your hypothesis in place, what you need there is data. And across the minor leagues in 2022, there was a reduction of about 25 minutes per game because of the pitch clock. And it took players a little while to get used to it, but, Raul Ibanez put it very well. Major League Baseball players are extraordinarily adaptable creatures. Like, they have to adapt every at-bat. Well, guess what? Players adapted. Violations were cut in half after a month. And the pitch clock was a rousing success.
But what you're saying is that actually this is the tinkering, this specific distilling of a higher proof baseball that everybody turns out to really like the taste of. This is the innovation that might actually be something to look back on decades from now and point to as the thing that helped save the game.
Yeah, and pardon me for making an extended distillation metaphor here, but this is like if you are loading your thumper with apples and your base spirit is running through it, there are going to be some people who don't like apple brandy, right? Like they're wrong and that's okay, but they're not going to like it at first. They're just going to get used to it. And I think the players understand that this is something that's here, not just because it's collectively bargained and we gave it up, but because we know the place of our sport in the grand scheme of the American sporting landscape. And we know that we've lost market share. And we know that we don't appeal to the sorts of fans who are going to make this sport as prominent as it warrants. And so even though, yeah, there are guys who are having a difficult time adjusting, I spoke with people at the Major League Baseball Players Association, and nobody, like literally, there has not been one player who has called up the union and said, I hate this. This is a problem. We need to get rid of it. What were you thinking? Which is wild considering there are 1,200 players in the union and every single one of them has an opinion on what the sport should be. And I think that speaks to what the pitch clock is, which is an actual elegant solution.
Agreed.
Like we go hunting for elegant solutions all the time to our problems. And how often do we find them? Like an elegant solution is, you know, when you're going on the beach with a metal detector and you actually find a piece of gold.
Oh, no, Jeff, it's when you can figure out in a resting state of conflict how everyone's incentives can actually be satisfied.
Not all fans are going to be satisfied with this. I think it's important to note that up front. But it's been interesting to me to see who this is most jarring for. You would think it's the traditionalists, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in a lot of ways, it's not. The traditionalists, the people who, you know, grew up loving baseball in the 60s and 70s and 80s, look at pitch clock baseball, look at no shift baseball, and say, well, that looks familiar. That's something I knew once upon a time before guys started stepping out and adjusting their batting gloves, before pitchers went through routines where they would hold the ball for 20, 25, 30 seconds before delivering a pitch. This is the type of pace of baseball that I grew up with. It's more the younger fans, Pablo, who have been jarred by this. And by the way, if you have not seen a pitch clock baseball game yet, when you do, it will be a jarring experience. Because it is so different than what baseball has become over the last few decades that you're going to be like, wow, this really is a different game. But I also think you're going to say, wow, this is really a better game too.
Yeah, well, look, the idea that Charlie O. Finley's pitchometer, the clock, a literal clock will be displayed, that's what we're seeing in spring training, like behind home plate, off to the left somewhere, we see a giant countdown clock.
Yep.
Are we going to get that when the real games start?
Major League Baseball has said the clock will be out of the frame, but I'd have to imagine that the score bug is going to include a clock somewhere, or at least when it starts counting down. And let's be clear about what the clock is now. There are a few rules that are involved here that have changed from where they were in the minor leagues. You know, it was 14 seconds bases empty and 19 seconds with runners on. It is now 15 seconds with bases empty and 20 seconds with runners on. Batters have to be in the box and quote unquote alert toward the pitcher, which essentially means you look up at the pitcher with 8 seconds left on the clock. So really for batters, it's an 8-second clock. And for pitchers, it's a 15-second clock. Beyond that, you get two step-offs or pick-off moves. And then if you do a third time without picking off the runner on first base, that is considered a balk. And runners advance one base automatically. Doesn't matter where they are on the base paths, they get to go ahead one base. So there are penalties in place, and really the implementation of the lack of disengagements from the rubber is what makes this pitch clock work as effectively as it has in the minor leagues and as it has in spring training. Because let me tell you, Pablo, it's worked in spring training. The second day the Boston Red Sox and the Atlanta Braves were facing one another, and there was an automatic strike called on a batter because he was not alert to the pitcher, that ended the game.
He's out.
They have called strike three. Wow! This is mayhem! Oh! Automatic strike three called with the bases loaded.
Nobody wants to see a game end on an automatic ball or strike.
Suboptimal.
And yet, I think that day was seminal to baseball players understanding that Major League Baseball is going to enforce this and going to enforce it, even if the consequences are as ugly as that. And I think because of that moment right there, guys knew you better be ready and you better get used to this because it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, no, that was a scared straight moment, Jeff. No, Jeff, it all is both a repudiation of some aspects of my childhood, right? I remember those rituals. I remember all of it. The OCD aspect of baseball was kind of charming. But now I've realized, okay, it needs to change. And so I want to jump in the time machine again, but go into the future. And I want to bring us to October, where a lot is different in both of our worlds. But it is the bottom of the ninth. The game is close. It's a national television evening. And when the TV cuts to, you know, like three different crowd shots of fans on their feet, the rally caps are on, the thundersticks have been revived, right? Are we going to lose the tension that builds slowly through those slower burn emotions? Like, what do you think we are going to lose? What do you think you're going to miss given all of the optimizing and speeding up of the clock?
Perhaps, Pablo, I'm being a prisoner of the moment here. But the best at bat I think I've ever seen, or at least the most tense at bat, and the one with the most stakes, and the one that the narrative lined up perfectly, and I mean perfectly, was Mike Trout standing in the batter's box and Shohei Ohtani 60 feet, 6 inches away on the pitcher's mound to end the World Baseball Classic. Mm. And it was a pretty fitting denouement for the pre-pitch clock era. This was the last at-bat we're going to see for a long, long time without a pitch clock. And it was incredible. It went 3-2. It was the ninth inning. There were two outs. It was a one-run game. The two best players in the world who happened to be teammates were facing one another. And there would have been a pitch clock violation on all six pitches. And so when you look at it through that, if you were to suggest that baseball is going to be missing something because it cannot have an at-bat like that anymore, I have no counter-argument to that. Like, you're right. It will be different. But I think that suggesting different is worse presupposes something that's not necessarily true. I am wide open to the idea that maybe Major League Baseball should consider turning off the pitch clock in, say, like the ninth inning. But then,
yes.
How much different is it?
It's not very one baseball
to
make exceptions for the most dramatic television-friendly moments.
Yeah, I mean, the inconsistency there, it just doesn't follow logic. And listen, sometimes the best part of sports are the most illogical parts. And so this is one of those things where I just want to see what October is like this year, because I don't discount the possibility that a sped up game in the late innings could be really good too. Like, letting a moment breathe is great, but knowing that these moments also are going to be so intense and so quick and have so much at stake, and that you have to make these decisions in a much more compressed period of time, I think has its own level of drama as well.
Yeah, yeah. My teammate, Jeff Passan, the sound we've both been hearing as we wrap up here is the sound of my own clock ticking down. And without being too emotional or morbid, for that matter, I just want to say that I'm shocked that you got to use the word denouement before I did on my final episode of ESPN Daily.
Hey, Pablo, have you ever tried eating a clock?
I have not.
It's very time consuming.
Not. Oh, my God.
Pablo, do you know what happens when you annoy a clock?
Please stop. Please stop.
It gets ticked.
What?
It gets ticked off. And did you hear about the man who put the clock under his desk? He wanted to work overtime.
Do you have like a book? Are you reading off of a book? What is this? Just Jeff, this is why I'm leaving.
Here's the thing. Let me just say this in all sincerity. When our friend Mina Kimes stepped aside because her plate got too full, I was thrilled, and I know I wasn't the only one who was thrilled to hear that you were taking over ESPN Daily. And your ability to take a show that she made wonderful and make it even better reminds me why I'm so proud to have been your colleague and to continue to be your colleague. It's one thing for you to be annoyingly smart and another for you to be exceedingly curious and another for you to work incredibly hard, and to have all three makes for a great host, and that is what you've been. So on behalf of the people who make this show and our dozens of colleagues who have appeared on it,
yes,
we're going to miss you, and we know you're going to be great in your new universe. And thank you, Pablo, for making us all smarter and, you know, for the puns.
Jeff, I don't think there's enough time left for me to summarize all of the puns that I wish I had polished to one up you today. And I'm going to leave kind of mad about it. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Pablo.
Oh, God. Jeff is gone now, right? Yes? Okay. Yeah, Jeff's gone. Which means it is just you and me, dear listener, at the end here. And it's time to say goodbye. I've hosted ESPN Daily, for almost 700 episodes now. And I hope it's clear to you that this show is a team sport. This is a show that is more than just me, so much more than just me. It is a show that is made, actually, by a bunch of names that you should have heard before. But Redford Craig, Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Heather Lombardo, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andre Soto, Andy Tennant, Chris Tuminello, Aaron Vail. That's the squad right now. That's the current staff of the show. These are the people that I've been writing with, who have made me better and who make all of this ambition possible. And so the question remains, why the f*** are you leaving? To which I say, good question, dear listener, / mom, / myself in moments of great vulnerability. And it turns out that the answer can only be found at pablotorre.com. Now, it did just feel gross what I just did there, drop a personal website in a very sincere moment, but it is sincerely meant. That is where I'm actually going to answer this question and explain what I'm doing, what I'm building, why I think you'll be interested in it, actually, and why I am both thrilled about it and also terrified, and why it is that this was worth me leaving ESPN after, almost a dozen years, while also still kind of staying behind at the company. It's complicated. I'll explain. PabloTorre.com. There's a secret email you'll get when you sign up. It's totally free. You now officially more than get the drift. Okay. If I know our show well enough, I believe there is some music playing right about now. And at the very end here, for the last time, I just want to tell you that I am filled with two things. One of them is an incredible gratitude for everybody who ever came on the show, worked with me on it, gave me a second of your time listening to it. And the second thing I am feeling is this undeniable impulse. An impulse that I don't think is going to leave me anytime soon, to be honest. An impulse that makes me want to tell you that I am Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. And I really, really hope that I'll get to talk to you again. Thanks.